Commons Conversations is a series of interviews in which campaigners share their experiences and insights into activism, learning in movements, and radical history. Produced by the Commons Social Change Library, episodes in the fourth series cover multicultural and First Nations voices from the climate movement, regional and rural organising, artivism, fierce vulnerability and radical resilience, the fight against corporate disinformation, campaigns countering the far right, and more. The 2025 to 2026 series can be heard on Saturday afternoons between 1 and 2 p.m. in December and January on 3CR, or found as a podcast at 3cr.org.au/actingup or via commonslibrary.org.
Hello and welcome to Hayley Sestoikas from Environment Victoria joining us on Commons Conversations to talk about rural and regional organising and campaigning. Welcome, Hayley.
Hi, Holly. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, would you like to start with introducing yourself and talking about who you are and what role it is you play?
So for the last 4 years, I've been the Latrobe Valley and Gippsland community organiser with Environment Victoria. And it's been really great to come back to Gippsland to work in this region because it's where I grew up. I grew up in the Latrobe Valley. And yeah, after spending some time in my sort of formative activist organising life, working with regional communities in New South Wales and in central Queensland, predominantly against trying to stop new coal projects, yeah, I decided it was time to come home. And so I've been here back home for about 5 years now.
Well, maybe one question just pops up immediately from hearing that is, what's different organising in your home community or around it compared to, you know, being in another state and doing that work?
I think working in a place where it is home automatically gives you the ability to draw on the connections that you already have in the community. And I think in some ways you have a greater connection and sense of the problems and the issues and the places and the people that are affected and impacted by things. I don't think it's impossible to feel that in other places. I certainly felt that when I lived in Queensland and in Maules Creek in New South Wales as well, you know, building up connection to the places and the people there. But I think when it's where you live and where your family live, you definitely feel it more intimately.
Yeah, it sounds like a kind of greater depth to the engagement. Yeah. And like, how did you come to be playing these roles? Like, what drew you into campaigns and community organising?
I think what drew me in was frustration, first of all. I've always had a real love for the environment and a strong sense of justice or you know, wanting to speak up and do something when I see injustice. And I was feeling really frustrated for a long time and trying to find my way in to take more meaningful action. I was working as a chef, you know, my sort of first career, and looking for ways to do things. But I sort of hit a point where it was actually the campaign to protect the Great Barrier Reef from the Adani coal mine and the Galilee Basin that first really threw me into this, when I actually threw in the tea towel and decided, no, that's it. I need to actually go and really dedicate much more time to this in a serious way. And I think I've always been somebody that wants to be out there and talking about these issues. And for a long time, that's what I did. I talked to colleagues and co-workers and people in the streets and asked questions and tried to raise these things. And I have always been a people person. And I think even a lot of my skills in the kitchen, in terms of running a kitchen as a head chef, were really interchangeable with like being an organizer and trying to multitask and work under pressure and have all these different streams and things going on in a constantly changing environment that you're having to navigate. So, I mean, that's why I love being a campaigner and an organizer, because every day is a new challenge. It's the people that you meet and the different changing context and, you know, it's just so different, and we get to be really creative too with it. That I think after I quit my job as a chef, I went up to Bowen. That was sort of where I first started, and I was not really affiliated with any group or anything at that stage. And I started couch surfing and going around to different businesses and shops and people in the street and asking them, hey, what do you think about this expansion of the Abbot Point coal terminal? Do you think it's going to affect you? Are you worried about the marine environment? And so I just kind of had this natural intuitive kind of wanting curiosity and wanting to ask questions and really listen to people. And I realized quite early on that when you do ask people questions and kind of keep on digging a little bit, they often can come around to an entirely different answer, you know, just by asking the right questions and question some of those beliefs or those things that they might, those views they might have already held on to. So, yeah, that was kind of how I really first got involved. And when I did get involved in activism, I came to really just get a sense of the ability to make change, and where I had felt quite frustrated previously and not really found meaningful inroads, I got involved in the fight to save the Laird Forest and stop the Maules Creek Whitehaven mine. And yeah, just found an incredible community and really unlikely allyships. And I was exposed to, yeah, meeting and working with and learning from First Nations communities for really for the first time, and understanding sort of the depth of the resilience and the culture and the strength there. And I was so inspired, and it just really inspired me to keep going. The sense of agency that I had, really for the first time in that actually we're not powerless to do something. I you know, I'm me, like most other people my age and other ages, but you know, a young person coming up in a time of climate and environmental fear, I think, you know, and the worries of, you know, what's going to happen in our world. I found that by taking action, I could deal with it better, you know, and know and see the things that we're doing and the positive changes as well. So, yeah, I think it's my way of actually staying sane by doing things. Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense. And it was very interesting to kind of hear your path, because that natural inclination you had to listen and be curious about things kind of started you off. So, yeah, very much kind of natural organizer tendency there. One little thing I was wondering about is that often folks who are growing up in the regions, you know, have to make some choices about what paths to pursue and where they need to go to do it. Like, it'll be, oh, if you want to get ahead in this career, you really have to move to the city. And I wonder what that looks like around campaigning and organizing. You know, is there a sense that the stuff happens elsewhere, or, you know, that you can actually, yeah, be based where you are and focused on this work, and it's a kind of viable choice.
For me, as a young person growing up, there was nothing really even remotely representative of being environmental, I think. So growing up in the Latrobe Valley, you know, it's very much an industrial region that has our whole narrative about who we are as a region is built around coal mining. You know, my dad was one of four children, and he actually went away and became a police officer because he didn't want to go and work in the coal mines. He wanted to go and help people. And I think, you know, there are a lot of problems with policing, but I think, you know, that's where I got a strong sense of my justice, was from my dad and wanting to make a positive change in the world. But I guess for me growing up, yeah, there wasn't a lot around. I think, you know, green, the word greenie is still a really dirty word out here in a lot of spaces. And it's all kind of mushed together in this big muck of like, you're a green, you know, you're an environmentalist. And I think we are really changing that. And it has changed a lot over, I think, over the last 5 to 10 years in particular. There's new stories that we're managing to tell, and there's stories that people already feel, right? So it's like people, we all love this place and we all love this country, but we just have different ways of doing it. So I think that's what I've really learned is trying to connect, you know, another person might have a different way of doing that thing, but it is actually just about loving the place we live and loving this country where we are.
That's a really powerful way to connect with people. So, kind of thinking about some of the campaigns you've been involved in, What approaches to organising and campaigning have you found to be effective in regional communities?
I think one of the things, just to sort of follow on from the point I was just making, was that we need to work with the people that are showing up. And that means working with people that often maybe have different beliefs and views and sometimes different values to us, and finding ways to communicate and connect with those people in spite of that, or maybe because of that, you got to try even harder. I think an example of this was the nuclear campaign in the last federal election, where we brought together an alliance of groups from across Gippsland to become the Nuclear Free Gippsland Alliance, because we were out there having conversations in our community about these issues. We were able to understand, how people were seeing the issue and what were the aspects that were most important to them. And we also, we kind of know our community, so we know the way they're kind of thinking about these things. And while sort of tradition and security might not be the values that I would personally put as my highest values, like for me with the nuclear campaign, it was about a fair and equitable future, and the rights of First Nations people to say no, and the impact that uranium mining and nuclear waste has on other people's country. I was personally coming at it from a very different place, but to be able to connect with the local people and run a successful campaign, we had to talk about the things that most connected to them. So, having nuclear waste driving past our schools, and the security risks, and we want to have a tradition of still powering Victoria with clean renewables. So, kind of speaking to people in ways that they can most connect with has been really useful.
There's something in there potentially around flexibility or not being dogmatic yourself, so that you can stay open enough to see where people are at and find the common ground.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think another thing that I wanted to share was just the mantra by Adrienne Marie Brown, moving at the speed of trust, is so important. And it's something that, I try and hold close to heart. And that takes time. Like, that takes a lot of time. And I think that this is particularly important in regional areas and for your campaigners who are thinking about doing work. If there is a region that is particularly important for a campaign, what does it look like to go into that community? I've worked on campaigns where it's been important for a short period of time, for a phase of a campaign, to be in a community. And what does that fly in, fly out kind of vibe actually look like? Sometimes it actually erodes the trust and makes it harder for the people who are doing there to do the work and be able to, build up that trust. So I think it's about the consistency and sticking around, showing up, the same as we would with First Nations community, showing up as allies. Like, that's what it looks like for regional communities as well.
So avoiding a transactional approach, which is kind of, we want to get this thing and we need you to get it. This is our plan. You should get on board with it. It's actually noticing there's reciprocity here. There's other things that are already happening in this space. There's
Absolutely.
other areas of like neglect or exploitation that's happening in those communities from government and corporations and the work they do.
And I think where possible, having people who are from that community being the people who are championing a campaign is really important. I have been both someone who is, from the place where I'm working and someone who has flown in from elsewhere. And I think that it really does make a difference when you're from there. And if there is also going to be champions in the place where you're going, so making sure that you're finding those people because they're either thinking about it or already working on these things and have like such a great amount of local knowledge and ideas. And I think really actually investing and building up the capacity of those people that are there, because it's actually the long-term change. Yeah, I think often some of our regional areas are quite entrenched. We're quite entrenched in a bunch of ways. Our politics are quite entrenched. Out here in Gippsland, it's been Nationals' heartland for over 100 years, and it feels almost immovable. But I think it's worth the time and the resources to try and shift things, and that has proven itself. Like by Environment Victoria doing deep organising work in Gippsland for a number of years. I think we've been there almost 10 years now doing the deep work, we were really able to be in a position where we had built those relationships, we'd built the trust and the expertise. So when Peter Dutton, dropped a nuclear grenade and said he wanted to build a nuclear power station at Loy Yang, we could respond very quickly to that. So just because there's not an electoral win in the next cycle, it doesn't mean that investing in regional communities isn't worth it, in the long term. And I think there's so much great stuff and change that can be made.
And some of those things, yeah, you don't know what the actual outcomes are going to be or what ripples are going to come from it. But I think that's often the nature of social change work. So we're planting seeds everywhere and that bear fruit. Quite interested that you have had both the experience of being, embedded in your own community and also being that kind of fly in, fly out campaigner. You emphasized the importance of connecting with local champions and that trust was essential and ways to build trust. So I suppose just back to you being the FIFO, any things that helped make that go well besides kind of what you've already talked about?
I think it probably comes back to the consistency and showing up and listening are probably the things. And even when I was a FIFO, I FIFO'd in for, a few years at a time. So you're sort of there, you're on the ground, you're getting to know people, do as the locals do, And so, yeah, really getting a sense of the place where you're in and what it's like, and not coming in with preconceived ideas or judgments about it. I think it probably helped, even though I was a FIFO, they were coal mining communities, the same as where I had grown up. So there was sort of a lot of similar dynamics. Another point that I probably just want to raise is just that there's a deeply gendered nature too. I think particularly working in regional communities, that a lot of the regions where we're working, and a lot of my work has been based with Environment Victoria, is based around the transition away from coal mining in the Latrobe Valley. But I live in East Gippsland, where we're also experiencing the transition away from native forest harvesting. And so as a volunteer, I'm deeply engaged in the process of community transition in this space. And I think what I've noticed sort of in both realms, these are historical workforces that are historically built on kind of men working these strong jobs and all of the things that are sort of tied to that. I mean, it's also not to sort of skip over the fact that out here in the regions, we're also really impacted by the climate impacts of drought and bushfire and industrial disasters too, like the Morwell mine fire. Latrobe Valley has been a sacrifice zone for many generations, and we experience the health impacts of that. And then there's knock-on effects which impact women and gender diverse people out of that, care responsibilities and access to health services and things like that. So I think when we're thinking about our campaigning on environmental issues, we have to also be thinking about all of those other aspects and making sure that we're kind of coming at it with an approach that's, yeah, open-eyed to that and factoring those things in as well.
Well, that term sacrifice zones, that's very powerful.
Yeah, I read that in Naomi Klein's This Changes Everything, which was quite a powerful book. That was actually, yeah, quite a book that really sort of changed me when I read that.
Yeah, really important, isn't it? Because it was noticing all of the connections across different issues and the potential to have a movement of movements where we build together. So you kind of shared the FIFO perspective, which was also really good when you said, well, when I did that, it was for a couple of years at a time that you were kind of coming in and out, keeping a consistency of relationship. What about the challenges when you are embedded in a community, conscious that if it's a small community, everyone knows each other. Are there ways to have boundaries around the work? How does that go?
Yeah, great question. Also, yeah, that's probably one of the more challenging ones. I think the boundary part, in particular. I think when you're an organizer, just in general, I think it's really hard because we're working on the issues that aren't, it's not just work, right? Like this is our life, it's our reality we're all living. And the challenges we're facing are so existential, it's very, very hard to shut off. And on the other side, the relationships are very real. Like, as organizers, it's all about relationships, and they are real relationships and real reciprocity. And when somebody, is asking for support, you want to show up. Even when someone's in having great times, you want to show up. And so I'd say the boundary part is really hard. It's quite challenging. I'm actually okay with that. I don't really think of being an organizer as a job so much as it's just part of who I am and it's my life. And I think rather than having quite rigid divides around relationships, I'm learning to build in a little bit more rigidity just around making space for myself at certain times. Yeah, I think one thing that I've really found is that being an organizer can impact my own social life in some ways, because when you spend all week relationally with people, sometimes you get to the end of the week and it's hard to pick up the phone and call your best mate because you just kind of want to retreat a little bit and have some time to sort of process and, yeah, a bit of alone time as well. So,
Yeah, it totally makes sense. It's showing up with a lot of yourself every day, and then how many spoons do you have left at the end for your own? Yeah.
Dance helps. Dance and nature.
Definitely.
And I have found that, was just thinking about this on the weekend, why do I love living where I live in East Gippsland? And I feel like where I live, I'm so connected by the roots of the trees to the ancient old growth forests in far east Gippsland. And I feel like the strength of those really big trees gives me the capacity to think about the really big holes in the valley and the giant coal mines, which is such an immense challenge of how do we fix these gigantic coal mines, which are unstable and flammable, and it's going to take us 30 years and five times the water in the Sydney Harbour to fill them, and we don't know where it's going to come from. And it's so hard to think about that actually this nature here that is still impacted by climate change, but in most part magnificent and thriving. I think that the refuge of the nature here in Gippsland in the Far East really gives me the capacity to deal with some of these really big challenges.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, just thinking a bit more about that's good. You're noticing the things that sustain you or enrich you. Have there been any sort of set up support networks or peer check-ins or, yeah, other ways that you've been supported as a campaigner working where you do?
My family are amazing. They are the best support that I have. I think just even that in itself, being near my family, they've been able to, get around the different things that I do and support me with my care responsibilities and things like that. So just personal networks have been amazing. But I think also the networks that I've built within, our work of Environment Victoria are really genuinely caring relationships where we all kind of have each other's back and we turn out and check in with each other. And I think we've been able to build a really strong culture of care and of self-care as well. So that has been great. Often I'm working with like a bunch of the volunteers and colleagues and we all kind of check in with each other, do you need a little break? How you going? So, I think just having like a really strong culture of it's okay to slow down. Yes, everything feels urgent, but actually, you taking care of you is really important as well. Another thing recently is I've done the Climate Cafe facilitator training with Psychologists for a Safe Climate, been part of some of those sessions, and I've really found them very useful in terms of processing emotions and grief around the issues that we're facing. And I'm excited to start running some of those out here in some of the regional areas, an offering, I guess, for people who maybe don't want to step into something. And it's not, climate cafes aren't about getting involved in action, but it is about kind of processing things so that maybe you can move to a space of being able to contemplate and take more steps.
Maybe not feel so overwhelmed or feel so much resistance to those things. Have you organized through any existing institutions or networks? So, in terms of when you're working in a community, are there ways that you tap into networks already in the community?
There are a lot of people who, if people are environmentally minded or thinking about the climate crisis, well, they probably all know each other already out here and have maybe been involved in different things in different ways. But have those relationships. And so I think it's just probably word of mouth and connecting with people through that way. That's been the way that we've really sort of done outreach and made new connections with different groups is, yeah, by just getting to know one person and they've sort of said, hey, you should come meet with this person. I mean, that's how I look at organizing is it's the sticky glue that takes this hand over here and this hand over here and this idea and sticks them together.
Excellent. And it just
Yeah.
keeps snowballing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And another question. So, curious how the regional media landscape affects campaigns. Any observations around that? And also, kind of the question of misinformation and disinformation spreading.
It's a real challenge. We don't have that much media. Like it's an interesting thing to say, right? Because we've got access to all of the media in the world that we could want to find. But in a lot of ways, people will get the one newspaper, you know, like one or two, or you've got the local rag. And I think maybe there's just like one or two main Facebook pages that people tend to use. And that's kind of useful in some ways, but it's what everybody's experiencing. We're all very siloed and divided. I think in terms of like regional, sort of more traditional regional media, what I have experienced is that there's sort of some entrenched hierarchies and ideologies, you know, within some of these media, and they don't necessarily give a fair view, but people do tend to see that as a representative view of what's going on in a place. And so it can be quite challenging to sort of share an alternative perspective. I think that the best way that we've been able to do that is really just by conversations and, you know, like actually getting out and talking to people it's a bit of a boring answer because it's probably what every organizer will tell you, but it is the power of face-to-face conversations is the most powerful way to cut through, I think. I think there are some cool and exciting new alternative media streams that are starting up, and I would just say that investment in those, like people out there have money and want to invest it into alternative medias. There's really great things that are up and coming, and trying to smash those pillars of the media, the power down and cut through. So,
Excellent. Is there anything that you would like to say to city-based organisations about how they approach future campaigning? Anything you want to tell them to stop doing?
oh, okay. I think I would say that organizing in regional areas takes time because we have some really deep narratives and traditional economies and things. Full disclosure, I've never really lived in a city and I've never really done a lot of city campaigning. So it is sort of difficult for me to compare in a lived way. But I think what I kind of pick up on is that, like, I sense that things typically move a lot faster when you live in like built up urban and suburban areas or, you know, cities. And so the expectations of like how fast things can move and happen maybe is a little bit different to how they actually do in real time when you're in rural and, you know, regional areas. And distance is a thing to think about. So all of this kind of takes more resourcing, you know, whether it be like how long it takes you to get to places or to get materials and supplies or yeah, just factoring all those things in. And then yeah, the sort of deep narratives and stories about who people are as a region and as a community are so important and core to who they are. And so when we pose alternate narratives that kind of clash and grate against them, and we're seen as outsiders trying to impose something, there's just an automatic resistance. And I don't think it has to be that way. I think, you know, there are different ways to go about doing this. I've sort of highlighted some of those, you know, like working with people that are there, getting to know them, and just like rethinking our approaches more generally.
That's brilliant. Anything else that you feel like you want to finish with?
Actually, I mean, just on the final point, I will just say, particularly on the renewables, just on the rollout of renewables and the sort of climate campaigning, I think, when I sort of talk about we're sort of clashing into narratives and traditions, it's also people feeling that they're losing control a little bit as well. And so we have to really take that into account. The impact of people, things are changing all around them. Yeah, just to be really cognizant of that, that when we're talking about these really important things that need to shift, like our policies and our energy sources and the way we live, they absolutely need to happen. But we totally have to take people with us. We can't tell them that this is going to happen and we're going to force this on them. It's going to be done best and most equitably when everybody can come along and understand what's happening, understand why it's happening, and then be able to advocate for their own needs.
Have their autonomy and agency respected, hey?
Absolutely. And, we might be able to help advocate for their needs as well because we all want this to be done right and most equitably. So.
Yep. Well, thank you so much, Hayley. It's been great talking with you.
Oh, thanks so much, Holly. I've really enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Commons Conversations. Today we brought you a discussion between Commons Social Change Library Director Holly Hammond and Hayley Sestokas from Environment Victoria. They discussed Hayley's experiences of community organising in rural and regional areas. To listen back to the episode and other recent episodes, visit 3cr.org.au/actingup. To listen to other series of the program, visit commonslibrary.org. In the next part of the program, you'll hear about some rural and regional organising resources.
Resources about rural and regional organising and campaigning from the Commons Social Change Library. Hi folks! In addition to my Commons conversations with Lucy Graham and Hayley Sestokas, I want to share some resources that folks might find helpful for organising and campaigning in rural, regional and remote areas. Many thanks to the Advocacy Research Network for summarising the resources that are available. We have four contexts to share from. In Australia, number one, First Nations organising, number two, Lock the Gate, number three, the Community Independence Movement, and then four, some resources from North America. Number one, First Nations organising. First Nations people in so-called Australia have been organising resistance since settler invasion in 1788. Many of the front lines have been remote communities and regional areas. Here's three historic examples to learn from. The 1939 Kumaraganja walk-off, where hundreds of Yorta Yorta people left their reserve in protest. The 1960s Wave Hill walk-off by the Gurindji people, which ultimately resulted in land back. The 1990s Jabiluka blockade, led by the Mirarr people, a black-green alliance with Action on Country, as well as in solidarity in cities around Australia. There's many other examples, and we recommend checking out Original Power's Community Resistance Timeline, showcasing Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander organising over the years. Building Power, a guide for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders who want to change the world by Original Power, is a comprehensive training guide covering campaign planning, power analysis, strategy and tactics. While designed for First Nations communities, the organising principles apply broadly. The First Nations Clean Energy Network also has a toolkit to help First Nations communities to be a central part of the renewable energy boom. Number two, Lock the Gate. Lock the Gate uses a distributed organising model where local groups retain autonomy while coordinating nationally. This movement has brought together unlikely allies, farmers, environmentalists and First Nations peoples to resist coal seam gas and fracking. The movement's success came from building unusual coalitions, undertaking strategic nonviolent direct action, face-to-face community surveys which demonstrated broad support, and powerful storytelling through video. Local blockades, combined with corporate campaigning and political pressure, has led to significant impact. Related resources on the Commons include Groundswell Gloucester, Fighting and Winning Against Fracking, Always Look Up, Connecting Community for a Win Against Gas, Enabling Emergence, The Bentley Blockade and the Struggle for a Gas-Field Free Northern Rivers. Example 3, Community Independence. The Community Independence Movement represents one of Australia's most significant recent examples of rural electoral organising. Starting in the rural Victorian electorate of Indi in 2012, this movement has grown to over 125 electorates nationally. The Indi Way model emphasises kitchen table conversations for community engagement, a values-based approach rather than starting with policies, and respectful, inclusive engagement across political divides, community-driven candidate selection rather than party pre-selection, consensus decision-making processes, and long-term commitment beyond just election campaigns. Key resources include Beyond Beyond Indi by Cathy McGowan in 2024 analyzes the movement's growth and the tensions between grassroots organizing and campaign-focused approaches. Voice for Indi Reflections and Kitchen Table Report document the actual organizing practices that sparked the movement. The Kitchen Tables Conversations methodology, where 440 residents participated in values-based discussions, became the foundation for community-led candidate selection and ongoing democratic engagement. These reports provide practical insights into how to organize conversations that build genuine community consensus. Voice for Indi Next Steps outlines how they continued community engagement after their electoral success, demonstrating that the organising doesn't stop when a candidate is elected. For academic analysis, see Citizen-led Democratic Change, which looks at how citizens in over 40 federal electorates organised as part of the community independence movement. The paper distinguishes between grassroots organising models and campaign-focused models, with important implications for sustainability and community ownership. And see another two academic papers, An Alternative to the Party, Australia's Movement for Community Independence, and The Rise and Impact of Australia's Movement for Community Independence, which examines the 2022 federal election results and grassroots organising factors. And our fourth area, North America. There are many interesting examples from the US and Canada, and here is a small taste. Building a Bigger We, Changing Hearts and Minds on Immigration in Rural and Small Town America. This documents the experience of rural organisers doing deep canvassing work. It notes the emotional toll of having difficult conversations about immigration in people's own communities, but also the sense of agency that the organisers gained. It highlights that although there can be backlash, there's also unexpected connections and breakthroughs that happen through this work. Training and peer support were essential for sustaining organisers through challenging conversations. How rural organising can build power is an analysis of rural organising in the United States with lessons on building progressive power in conservative-leaning rural areas. Building Power to Win is an organiser's manual from Spirit in Action, organiser's manual focusing specifically on rural organising contexts. And Rural and Remote Communities Climate Organising Toolkit from Canada addresses specific challenges of organising in isolated communities with limited resources. This summary of resources on rural and regional organising is just the tip of the iceberg. There's more coming soon to commonslibrary.org. If you have a story, manual, video, or other resource others could learn from, get in touch with the librarians. We would love to feature your work on the Commons Social Change Library.